Director Penny Marshall's 1992 film, A League of Their Own, put Hollywood's spotlight on a unique period in American culture and sports history. Professional baseball played by girls when the men were off fighting World War II. And that's when we learn just what crusty manager Jimmy Dugan, played by Tom Hanks, thought about crying and baseball.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris. Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No. No.
No. No. And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
Well, that was Hollywood's look at the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. That there is a strong Michigan side to the story of this league. The Muskegon Lassies, the Kalamazoo Lassies, Grand Rapids Chicks, Battle Creek Bells, and Muskegon Bells all played at one time in the league. My guest today tells their stories in a documentary called A Team of Their Own. Frank Boring is an affiliate professor in the School of Communications at Grand Valley State University. Welcome, Frank.
Thank you very much for having me.
This league was the idea of Philip Wrigley, wasn't it? And that it existed.
Chewing gum.
Yep. Chewing gum. Wrigley.
He also owned ballparks in Los Angeles and in New York. And so he had actually seen that the women's baseball sometimes outdrew, or actually women's softball, excuse me, sometimes outdrew the men. And so the idea that baseball might actually fail in 1943 because the men were going off to war, he thought, well, let's see if we can do it with women.
And what got you thinking about the young Michigan women who played?
Well, I was brought here back in 2003 as a documentary filmmaker. I'm actually not a PhD. I don't have really an academic background. I'm at Grand Valley because of my professional background. And I started the Library of Congress Veterans History Project here, of which we now have over 1,200 interviews at Grand Valley. But the Library of Congress Veterans History Project was an attempt to get interviews with veterans, either through oral history, documented with video is the way I did it. And so I found that there was four remaining Grand Rapids Chicks, and so I contacted the Library of Congress Veterans History Project director, and I said, I'd like to include these women in the Library of Congress. And he said, well, I don't know if that really fits in the Veterans History Project. And I said, well, if Rosie the Riveter can be in the Library of Congress, then Rosie the Right Fielder should be. And sure enough, he did. I did those four interviews, and within 2 weeks, one of them had passed away.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, you know, if somebody doesn't do this, it's going to be gone forever. And so 10 years later, 47 interviews later, we not only have them as part of the Library of Congress, our national history, these women are now part of our national history, but there's a documentary film produced at Grand Valley.
And you made students such an integral part of this effort, didn't you?
Absolutely. One of the things when I came here as an independent filmmaker, my first film cost $400,000. That was on the Flying Tigers, and it aired nationally on PBS. I came here and I realized, wait a minute, I don't have to rent any equipment. They've got all the state-of-the-art cameras, equipment, editing, and guess what? There's people that know how to use this stuff. So I integrated a model in which history students did the research, the film and video students shot the interviews and did the editing, and then marketing and public relations literally planned out how it's going to be seen across the country and came up with a media kit and all that. And then the IT people created the website and created the Twitter account and the Facebook account. So it's basically replicating what a real documentary filmmaker would have to do without having to raise $400,000.
Oh, well, the work is exquisite. Let's take a quick listen to some of this documentary, A Team of Their Own.
My dad was reading the paper, and he said to me, there's an all-American baseball, girls' baseball league that's having tryouts, and it's going to be right in the neighborhood.
We had a strong passion for the game. Everybody was trying to do their best and trying to make the team. You knew what you had to compete against. You knew what you had to beat.
Let's switch to some activity on a little more glamorous scale. These girls look like a group of college co-eds. But as you see them now, they're the South Bend, Indiana, entry in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League.
And that is from the documentary A Team of Their Own, telling the Michigan side of the story of the World War II era All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, produced by a team led by my guest, Frank Boring of the School of Communications at Grand Valley State University. Frank, what was the overall story that you uncovered through these nearly 50 interviews?
Well, I think the key thing is that if you love the movie, and believe me, I love the movie. I've seen it probably 8 times and just watched individual scenes. But this really tells the true story. For one thing, and I hope all your listeners are sitting down. I don't want to be falling over and hurting themselves.
Okay.
There was no crying in baseball. The women were very adamant about that. In fact, in the film itself, we included 2 of the women who said that they never saw anybody crying. They were baseball players. But now they've embraced that so much that they actually, if you go to a reunion, and I've been to 3 now, I'm going to the 4th one in Florida, they have T-shirts now that say, there's no crying in baseball. So the other thing was that they started playing underhand, and it evolved into overhand, whereas the movie, the Penny Marshall movie, starts out with them trying out actually playing baseball. But what they're known for is the fact that they actually did play on a field with the same equipment that the men played eventually. But in the very first couple of years or so, it was underhand.
And these were very young women, weren't they, when they had it off to play?
15, 16 years old, 17, 18. The oldest was probably in their early 20s. Mm. And that's why they had the chaperones. I mean, that's why Wrigley, you know, had these women looking out after them, because they were afraid that these are young girls. You know, you're going to send them to Chicago. It's dangerous. One of the women said in an interview, says he told her mother she wanted to go there. She goes, you're going to Chicago? That's where Al Capone is. There's no women baseball players. He's probably up to something over there. But yeah, the chaperones were literally to take care of them. And we cover all of that. The beauty of this film is it really gives you an inside view, walking in the shoes of these girls. We literally have you at when they tried out, how they tried out, how they heard about it, and then getting on the trains and on the buses and going out to these different places, and then how it eventually evolved into baseball. So it's really a beginning, middle, and end, you'll understand, about the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League.
Do we have a sense how many are left?
This is going to sound morbid, but I get emails on a regular basis that another one is gone, but my historians could tell you the exact number. I don't remember exactly. But there were 10 teams and over the period of 1943 to 1954. So there was a lot of them. The ones that we got and the ones that was so desperate for me to get several years ago were the ones that started in 43. And all of them are gone now. But I have their stories for the Library of Congress. And that's one of the things that I'm very proud about my team and about the people that worked on this, that we saved those stories before they were gone.
It is so important to get those oral histories and the interviews from that World War II generation, as you say, before they are gone. Yeah. This must have been transformative, talking with these women, making this film with you for the students on your team.
It was for me and for the students. I think that when you are a film and video student or you're a marketing, advertising, event planning student, In school, you plan these projects. They're almost like pretend projects. They're class projects. This one, they knew from the very beginning that this was an important project to work on, that was going to be something they're going to take with them for the rest of their lives. And they'll be able to tell their children, their grandchildren, that they actually preserved the story of one of the most remarkable pieces of American history, not just sports history.
Right.
And another thing that I thought that was very, to go back to your original question, almost every one of these women, when they finally did leave, had earned enough money to go to college. Some of them had extraordinary careers. A lot of them started baseball or basketball or golf programs in their communities. And I think an argument could be made that they were really the pioneers of what eventually became Title IX. I mean, every little girl that plays sports in the United States today, in my opinion, owes a debt of gratitude to these amazing women, because they proved it could be done.
Now, you're getting this film out before audiences by holding screenings around the state, and we should let everybody know that this Thursday night, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the Lautet District Library in Grand Haven, you're going to have not only the screening, you're going to have a couple of the players?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tell
us. Two of the most delightful ones. Yeah, yeah. Doris Cook, otherwise known as Cookie, and Rosemary Stevenson, both of them are in the film. Cookie was the one that really is responsible for the basic concept of this film, because when I did the interview with her, she's the one that said, I'm going to introduce you to the board of directors at the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. She was instrumental in getting me introduced. And I have to tell you that it was not an easy job. They had been approached many times by other documentary filmmakers to do their story. I mean, obviously, with League of Their Own, everybody and their brother wanted to do their story. But they were very reluctant to work with some of the people that did approach them. Hmm. It took a while for me to convince them that I was sincere, that I really was going to do this. And when we had the premiere here at the Public Museum in Grand Rapids, one of the members of the board of directors stood up during the question and answer and literally turned around and looked at the audience and said that we'd been approached many, many times. These are the ones that finally did it. And for my students to stand there and listen to that and hear that, that was a great moment for all of us.
Well, you can find out more information on future screenings by searching for A Team of Their Own on Facebook. Any other suggested ways for people to loop into what you're up to?
Yeah, if you go to Grand Valley State University's website and type in Veterans History Project, you'll have access to over 1,200 interviews with World War II veterans, Korea veterans, Vietnam veterans, etc. But also there's a special segment there on the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. You can watch the entire interview. Don't have to use a password. It's great for scholars. It's great for future generations of people that want to study this story.
Great work. Frank Boring, Grand Valley State University School of Communications, you and your team of students. Thank you so much for sharing A Team of Their Own with us on Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me on.